We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Now has the puck. Here's Kopitar with an opportunity, and he scores! The Kings captain, Anze Kopitar, the overtime hero for LA, and the Kings steal game two, 5-4 final score.
He's come a long way from that dash six on February 13th against the Buffalo Sabres. There's hope for Anze Kopitar yet in his still blossoming NHL career. Welcome into Sabres Live. What a finish by LA's captain, who now has three overtime winners. And man, does he not like staying up late, because all three of his career playoff markers in extra time have happened in the opening 8.5 minutes. So thank you, Anze. It was a long night already. And what a game for the Kings. I would disagree, because I'm prone to do that, with the call saying that they stole game two. They led 2-0, they led 3-1, they led 4-3, and they won the game 5-4. I think the Kings were full marks for the win last night.
You're absolutely right. You know what? They forced the Edmonton Oilers in making a lot of mistakes early. Look at the first goal. Evan Bouchard has the puck. He comes around the net. He throws it off the wall. Who is the guy that stops it at the blue line? It's Anze Kopitar. All the Edmonton Oilers players are thinking offense, offense, offense. Hey, we scored 7 goals last year, last game, you know, game one. We were up 4-0. Let's do the same thing. No, he turns the puck over, gets it to Kempe. Kempe scores the second goal by Kempe. What a beautiful deflection that was. But they took advantage of a sloppy Edmonton Oilers. And look, that's not easy to do. And then when the Oilers make it 2-1 with Kulak, it's Drew Doughty. I told you, if the Kings win this series and in 7 games, it's going to be Drew Doughty getting 7 or 8 points. And he's the one that took off, right? He's like, I'm going on a breakaway at the end of the first period. And he made it 3-1. Look, they didn't steal it. They earned it because they put the Oilers in a tough position. Although the Oilers came back really strong. Talbot made some big saves to keep it close, and then they were able to get in an OT. I didn't think Stuart Skinner was great either. I thought he was okay, but not great.
Well, his quote was, luck wasn't on my side tonight. So whatever.
Hey,
no, he didn't specify gender.
Okay.
So he said luck was
very
not
Canadian of him.
Was it?
let's keep it generic, but yeah, I don't like when you get beat
center ice under the faceoff dot.
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't like when goalies get, especially at this time of year, like clear sight shot, right? When you're set and you see the puck, like even the first goal by Kempe, the Kopitar overtime goal is a laser.
It's a pretty great laser.
It's
right?
A really good shot, but yeah. I'm thinking, you lose the game if you give up that goal. You win the game if you make that save, right? That's how I see playoffs being so tight.
Yes, and with it, now the series is 1-1, and I'm still not sure whether you will get the full point total from Doughty that you are projecting, but I was going to text you repeatedly that you were getting your Drew Doughty night last night, and he ended up just shy of 30 minutes, and again, that's a little different than some of the other measures that we were talking about. I was focused on how Andrew Burnett was using his lineup top to bottom against Vancouver. I think when you look at Vegas last night and their win over Dallas, again, look at how Cassidy is using this full Vegas roster. And we can say full for the first time because Alec Martinez played last night, which meant they were at the highest end of their cap possibilities if the cap actually mattered in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And look, the ice time was amazing. There was three guys, I think, over 20. But even, again, like Pietrangelo was right at 22 minutes, even though he's the workhorse. Jack was over 20. Jack hits another artificial milestone in the sense of it's not historic, so to speak, but he's the fastest U.S.-born player to 30 playoff points in his NHL career. And what an absolutely amazing answer by Jack and the Golden Knights after Robertson and put them up. That pass that Eichel makes on what is like a breakaway, and then he turns it into a 2-on-1 or 1-on-0 to give it to Marchessault, just outstanding play.
Yeah, Jack Eichel sold it. He sold it because he also made the goalie bite, but he protected the puck from the back checker while selling, I'm going to go to the back end, and knowing that Marchessault was coming in on the right side. I always wonder in this situation if a player calls for the puck, but I like to think that Marchessault trusts Jack enough to say, I don't need to say anything. He's going to know that I'm there to make the play. Like, they're great hockey players. They don't know. They don't have to call, but Jack gets the empty net goal. This game was another one of those low shooting type of game, like as low as we had Vancouver, Nashville the night before, and the New York Islanders against Carolina, but it featured good goaltending. Jake Ottinger made a couple of the save on Dadonov. There was a couple other saves. Logan Thompson made some good saves.
You probably didn't like the Hanifin goal.
I didn't like the Hanifin goal because I felt like he retreated and went to a bad positioning. It's not so much that it was a weak goal. I just think he executed it in a bad way. But like I said, and we talk Samsonov and the Leafs, it doesn't matter if you make five, grade A saves in a game. It's the goals that you give up in the playoffs that really matter. You know, at 1-1, can't give up that Hanifin goal late in the second to make it 2-1. It eventually was the game-winning goal. At 1-0 for Toronto, Samsonov can't give up that goal to Trent Frederick to make it 1-1. If Frederick went short side from 40 feet out, a wrist shot, like, you just can't have that happen. And Toronto's all mad. It should have been a penalty called on McAvoy. Should have been a penalty call on Marchand, and at least a coincidental minors, Marchand and Bertuzzi, that would have negated that. You still got to play and make the save. And then the end, that Samsonov didn't.
Do we have the real audio of the Leafs complaining, and did it sound exactly like that, in that tone?
Let's ask Darren Dreger later at 12:30. He can make a really good, kind of impersonation of good complainers. He's really good
when
at that.
When he's not eating fish eyeballs.
Yes, that too. He didn't have any. I was working with him last night, though. He didn't have any fish eyeballs, which was good. But good old Dreg's, the Leafs are not happy about it right now.
He's 23 minutes away warming up in the Sabres live bullpen is Darren Dreger. Of course, Shana Goldman is coming up here immediately after we very quickly gloss even further over the Leafs and Bruins last night. What is your last takeaway from Boston taking a 2-1 series lead?
So obviously Brad Marchand had a big part of the game, and his response, that goal that made it 3-2, is a beautiful goal. Everybody in Toronto was talking about Mitch Marner. He got his point. Did it matter? No, right? He played 23 and then over 23
Why
minutes.
Does it not matter? It mattered.
It mattered, but I'm just saying they didn't win. In the end, they lost the game. So, they really miss William Nylander. And that's the biggest thing with the Leafs right now, is that they have Tavares, Matthews, Marner playing. And in game one, none of them really were there. In game two, Matthews put the team on his back. In game three, it's Marner that was the better of the three, but they're missing an added element. I feel like they're missing Nylander and what he can bring to the team. Domi was better, and Bertuzzi was noticeable, but it's Marchand in the end and McAvoy that get the best of the Leaf, because they got in their heads a little bit. But what about when Domi and Swayman Domi bumped Swayman on his way to the bench at a commercial break? Like, that is typical. Like, I look at it as a goalie's point of view, and I'm saying Swayman could have avoided the contact. Swayman didn't care. He wanted to let, Domi know, I'm not backing down. I'm going to go straight to the bench, and Domi gave him a shot. And in the end, that's when the game really started for the Boston Bruins, because in the first part of the game, there was really nothing going. That game started right there.
Amerks continue prepping for the start of their playoff series, and that is going to happen on Friday night. That would be tomorrow at Blue Cross Arena, 7 o'clock. Look forward to seeing you there. Obviously, it's game two on Sunday. I have a quick question before we get to Shayna as it pertains to the Amerks. And yeah, it's not playoff specific at all, but it is surrounding their head coach, Seth Appert, who talked yesterday about the fact that he's looking forward to having, a chat with Lindy Ruff beyond text message. And I was wondering whether you think, like, it's more your, I guess, opinion couched with a bit of knowledge. Yeah. But, like, if you're Seth Appert, this is not talking to Seth about it, and he did kind of dismiss, not dismiss, but he didn't dive into the topic wholeheartedly yesterday when he was asked about it. He's like, my focus is obviously here, right?
Yeah.
Meaning the Amherst. But I'm going to ask you, if you were Seth Appert, would you take an assistant coaching job in the NHL at this point in your career?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. And that's why I think that I have Seth's name. And I'm not saying that he is definitely would be on Lindy's staff. There's a lot of different options that obviously would be presented to Seth moving forward in this organization and outside the organization, because he's a really good coach, but he needs NHL experience. He hasn't gotten any NHL experience, and being able to do it with Lindy Ruff would be a really good starting point for Seth to get that NHL experience. I think of Brian McCutchen when I was with the Rochester Americans, coached the Amerks for what, 4-5 years before Randy Cunningworth took over. But Cutchy got basically elevated to Buffalo to go on Lindy's staff. And what was so great for my type of generation of players is we had all played under McCutchen in Rochester. And then we had that familiar face in Buffalo, knowing that he knew us, we knew him, and we felt comfortable, and it moved forward. I think Seth is in that same boat. But not only would that be good for the organization, I think it would be really good for Seth Appert to get that NHL. He's gotten a couple of the NHL experience, come in and coach the Sabres when Don had some illness and missed a few games. But I think for Seth Appert, it would be a really good step forward in his coaching career, going from, college to the National Team Development Program to AHL, and now go to NHL in a, keep graduating. Regardless of the title, you keep graduating to the best league.
Rochester and Syracuse, again, it's a habit at this time of year, and the Amerks try to take game one tomorrow night. Looking forward to being with Don Stevens and with you at Blue Cross Arena. 7 o'clock start time for that one. It's a best of five with the first two, and if necessary, game five happening in Rochester. Shayna Goldman has adjusted her schedule kindly to join us here on this Thursday. Shayna's with The Athletic, of course, and regular on Fridays on Sabres Live. Shayna, welcome in. We are being bumped tomorrow because of the NFL draft, so we're trying to maximize our Thursday show as much as possible today. Kind of dovetailing off of our quick discussion there on Seth Appert and whether he eventually joins Lindy Ruff's staff, which remains to be seen. When you look at the change of Lindy Ruff taking over the Sabres once again behind the bench, what do you see and know in Lindy's resume beyond the wins, beyond the longevity, that could, in fact, allow Buffalo to do what they are desperately needing here, and that is have Lindy Ruff guide them back to the postseason?
Yeah, when I look at this hire, I think of Lindy Ruff less as a tactician, more of a people manager, right? To me, that's his best strength. And you could kind of see that from the Devils locker room the last couple seasons. Where it kind of all clicks to me is how it ties in similar to that Devils team last year, right? You look at the Devils last year and they made the playoffs and they progressed more than everyone expected. And it was off of their rush game, right? We talked about, is that enough for them? And we had all those big questions, but that was the stepping stone for them to break through and turn the corner, was to thrive off that. You look at the Sabres last year and go, okay, what were their strengths? It was their rush game. Did they need to add more to it and round out their approach? Absolutely. But we knew at like their core, this was a really good team in transition. So if you can try to harness what Lindy helped the Devils become in 22-23, maybe you see that potential here because it's what they got away from this season. They got away from those offensive strengths. I think the key to it is going to be really good tacticians on his bench because we saw the difference in New Jersey when he got Andrew Brunette as his associate coach to help the offense click versus someone like Mark Greinke. So that's the big piece of the puzzle missing. But I think that's where it all comes together here.
So when I looked at the numbers, though, I didn't feel like the Devils dropped so much offensively last year in the expected goals department. They did, but obviously, you know, Jack Hughes was hurt, Dougie Hamilton was hurt. There's a lot of numbers that will come down. Lindy, I sat with Lindy yesterday for this show on an interview, and he mentioned the Sabres, their rush, when he took away the rush, right? How can, like, he make sure that they still get the rush? Because we pointed it out all season. When a team sat in the middle of the ice, a 1-3-1, the Sabres got nothing. How are the Devils against those type of situations, the 1-3-1? Were they able to break through? Is this a strength of maybe with Lindy or what he's learned from being in New Jersey and then bring it to Buffalo?
I think the key to the Devils getting through anyone's defense was their speed, right? And we saw that last year in particular. They came into the season and everybody was on their heels against them and didn't expect the speed. And when the league started to adapt to the Devils did struggle a bit. And then they found their footing again to rely on that. I think they, at their best, the Sabres, might be able to mimic that. The key, I think, for them is going to be not losing that against a really good forechecking team. And that's what made that Devils-Kane series so interesting, because you had two totally different styles of play really coming together. So I wonder if that's going to be the difference. It's not going to be how are you going to get through opposing defenses. It's how are you going to like hold your own against a team that has a little bit more tenacity. Like, how are you going to add that sandpaper without taking away from the speed and skill that you should be leaning into? And I think that's something a lot of teams struggle with, right? Because then they think of toughness in different ways, when I think that that's the element of toughness you need.
At the end of it all, every coach most often only succeeds with above average goaltending. So I asked you to take that out of the equation and just personally, from your standpoint, and maybe assuming that every team is different, although many players say that it really doesn't change that much when you go from team to team. Like, what do you value in a head coach in today's NHL? Because, Marty, I was fascinated yesterday when you put Lindy on the spot and asked him offense or defense, what matters most? And I dare say that, oh my gosh, we've actually made progress in the NHL because he did not immediately blurt out defense. He defaulted to it eventually. But he took his time and
he went to the other thing. He went middle. He said, well, defense. He goes, you can't win if you can't score. And that's really what he went down to after a little bit. Yeah.
So, Shayna, what do you value then in a coach today in the NHL?
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Like you say, it comes down to save percentage a lot of the times for goalies. And sometimes that's what exposes a coach. Right? It might not be what gets them fired, but it exposes them enough to make a change. And sometimes they just take the brunt of it and take the blame for it. So it really depends. I think being able to adapt to today's game is the key to being a good coach in the NHL. Because listen, we all know coaches get recycled left, right, and sideways. And it's not always a bad thing if you can learn and be different. If you're going to hire Gerard Gallant 10 times and be surprised when, you know, young players aren't getting key moments and, you know, he doesn't make adjustments on the fly in games, it's like, well, you know, what's the definition of insanity? But other coaches can change on the fly. I look at someone like John Tortorella, and I've made it clear I'm a Tortorella fan, but it's because of the way he's changed his approach. And him and Mike Sullivan said it. I believe this was a story written by the great Allison Lucan when she did a series on the Blue Jackets front office and coaching staff. And it was how the two of them in an offseason realized they need to think about how offense is created in this league. And they went through every goal and they were like, wait, we need to go bigger and look at scoring chances. You wouldn't think as John Tortorella as a numbers guy or even Mike Sullivan, but they became it in their own way, right? And it's not just that you have to rely on data, but you have to learn what works today and then put your own spin on it. So that is the key to being a successful coach for me.
Okay. How does, and I'm going to move on to the NHL and the playoffs quickly, because I want to talk about one of Duffer's favorite team, the Nashville Predators, and they were able to tie it up 1-1. In their series against the Vancouver Canucks. No Thatcher Demko. So how does the Vancouver Canucks, Rick Tocchet, able to overcome what is likely Thatcher Demko not available for round one and potentially for round two and more. Like, we don't know yet, week to week. But how does Vancouver overcome the loss of Thatcher Demko against the Nashville Predators?
First and foremost, I think he needs to settle the waters, right? Because you watch the beginning of that game. To me, it felt like everybody was overcorrecting. And we see this happen all the time. And sometimes you see it from a goalie, right? If their team's not doing anything, a goalie gets out of the crease a little bit more and is like, I'll do everything myself. You just need to calm everyone down and be like, it's okay. We've done this before. So that Hughes mistake on the first shift, it just felt like he was overcorrecting and everything kind of spiraled from there. I think it's keeping in mind how they did this in the regular season without Demko to end the year. And it was so interesting because we talk about the Canucks and we go, well, they're power play merchants and the shooting percentage and the save percentage. And the 5-on-5 numbers underwhelmed. But that end of the season, you saw their 5-on-5 numbers in both directions improve. They didn't always have the goaltending, but they were doing everything right below the surface to encourage more sustainable long-term results. That's what they have to lean into and remember, like, hey, we've made these adjustments before. We've done this before, so we can do it again.
By the way, Marty, we didn't delve into this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
On the heels of the Predators game two win, in which they blocked a ridiculous number of shots and were seemingly willing to play it the way it played out. I think a lot of players after are like, we might need to do more at the other end. But remember how much we talked about Dakota Joshua after game one?
Yeah.
How about his miss in game two when he was on the doorstep? He got around Saros, and then it was like the Pominville thing from years ago. It wasn't a double hit, but it was like the puck stuck to his blade. And when he went to slam it home, it slammed directly off the post. And then he was standing there like, what just happened? And then the puck gets, and he was literally like, after the whistle, he's just like looking up at the screen while still on the ice going, how did that not go in? Crazy moment. But of course, I'm only bringing it up, Shayna, because you know I'm a big Dakota Joshua fan. So,
as you should be. Look at what he's done this year. That third line all year has had an identity for them, no matter how they've trotted it out, right? Like when it was Bluger, Garland, Joshua, they were crushing it. Now, obviously, in a perfect world, Elias Lindholm is not your 3C, right? Like he should be top six. But on a line with Joshua and Garland, it's kind of like, all right, let him cook a little bit because you have a line that can play the game different ways. And they can, at the very least, sustain offensive zone time and just disrupt opponents. Like, at minimum, that's something for a third line.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the Rangers-Capitals series because we've only had time for three games a day. So there's been a lot of things. And we have four games. We get three and we're like, sorry, Matt Damon. You'll be on the next show, right? And that's what it is.
There's two games tonight, and we don't even have a show tomorrow.
I know. So, but I, you know, Ovi, like even this coach, Spencer Carberry, said, well, Ovi's not played to the level we want him to. And, you know, the Washington Capitals are in an 0-2 hole right now going home. So, it, you know, you win your games at home, whatever. But how does Washington get Alex Ovechkin going? Because they don't have a lot of offense to start with. And if Ovi doesn't score or produce, they're not going anywhere.
So I think step one is managing the matchups, right? Like, this is what we're going to be talking about, is every series shifts arenas. For Ovechkin, game one, he went up against the Zibanejad deadline. It did not go well for him. And he went up against Fox and Lindgren a lot. Didn't go well for him. If you're Washington, you put him up against Jacob Trouba every single shift and you say, try against Gustavsson, Trouba. The other part of it is getting him against that fourth line. Barkley Gaudreau's numbers aren't terrible against Ovechkin, but someone like Matt Rempe's numbers were really bad in game two, which is why you saw the Rangers in certain shifts in the third period, the last two games, you know, throwing Wemberg on the fourth line, throwing Trocheck on the fourth line to defend a lead, because that's an area they could be exposed. Because you're looking at it right now and everyone's defending Ovechkin, right? They're blocking a ton of his shots, which was this year in the regular season, I think 33% of his shots were blocked in all situations of his attempts, which is above his career high, I think, which is a career average of 28%. And then he's missing the net too, because everyone's getting sticks in the lanes. Like, he's the obvious target to go after. So you have to go for the softer matchups.
There are six teams right now that are boasting, I'll use that term loosely, a save percentage above 900. Only Tampa is losing their series with such numbers. So as it pertains to the Rangers and the Capitals, and it's Marty and I have talked off air a lot about this. It's been a strange year for the Capitals goaltending, just in, you know, the lack of presence, if you will, from Darcy Kemper. But like, how have you viewed the goaltending so far? And if you were Washington, would you be thinking of changing here?
Nope. Not at all.
No.
I like Kemper. I feel like Kemper was someone who took some heat even with the Avalanche. Like, look, they managed with, you know, average goaltending in the postseason because he was injured, and it kind of everyone forgot how good he was all year and how good he's been in years past, like behind those Arizona teams. Mm-hmm. This year, it just wasn't it. And Charlie Lindgren has been building to this moment, and he was the better goalie in the second half of the season. I am not big on rotating goalies in the playoffs at all. So you pick your starter, you stick with him until their play forces you to change your mind. Like with the Islanders today, how they're switching from Varlamov to Sorokin. I get it, because you have a Vezina caliber guy as your 1B right now, and you need to change up the vibe somehow. You're down 2-0. But with Lindgren, it's not like, you know, Kemper's having that crazy great of a year that you feel like you should swap. Like, I think you stick with the goalie that helped you get here. He's one of the best goalies in the second half of the season. And honestly, it's not his fault that the series is going this way.
So, you know, how sometimes on X, you get a notification and it's somebody commenting on a post that may have been made like years ago, but somehow it comes back. So yesterday, somebody went and tagged me to a post that Darcy Kemper had signed a 5-year deal with the Washington Capitals, and a picture of Kemper with the abs, right? And I think that person wanted to say, hey, Kemper should be playing, you know, next game or whatever. But I was so confused. I almost thought, like, wait, Kemper just signed an extension? I thought he had a big contract. Like, I was so confused about the whole thing. But it's almost forgotten that this is year two of a 5-year deal for Darcy Kemper.
That's why I brought it up.
Lindgren has been the guy, but I don't want to say if you go down 3-0, you almost have to tokenly just say, hey, Darcy, go ahead and play a game. But you have to think next year and the year after. That's complicated for Washington right now.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to see like what went wrong this year and try to figure out like how do we turn this around. And hey, all credit to goalie coaches who can figure these things out. And, you know, sometimes players just have bad seasons, and it's a little bit more obvious when you're a goalie having that versus any other skater. They definitely need to get him back on track. And it's not like he was terrible this year. I mean, there was a lot of bad goaltending this year, and he definitely is not the one in that conversation relative to some of the other guys. But yeah, if it's you're down 3-0, you might have to, right? And that's a let's just change the vibe situation.
They may call Braden Holtby and bring him out of retirement if they're down 3-0 and say, hey, you did it once, do it again.
There you go.
I would be more inclined to do it now at 2-0. At 3-0, I would say, Charlie, it's been your year.
Sorry, Bessie, take a seat.
Yeah. Which $5 million plus goaltender is more likely to move in the offseason? Kemper or Aiden Hill?
Ooh, that's a good one. I feel like I feel like the answer is going to be Hill. I don't know if he moves, but I'm going to say it because Vegas has to clear cap space because that is what they do. They build up a ton of cap space and then they ship people out and it happens to be their goalies a lot of the time. And I know Hill has had injury problems and consistency issues this year a little bit. Who among us hasn't? But like, it's a little more glaring for him. And you have Logan Thompson right there who's cheaper. So I could see it. I feel like the Capitals maybe shouldn't focus on moving a goalie. Maybe just like focus on getting some more young talent, maybe a center or two, so everyone can slot a little better.
We are going to have Darren Dreger here like at the bottom of the hour. And he was in Winnipeg for game one and two. So I'm going to reserve the Winnipeg questions, like the Jets and stuff. But Alexander Georgiev, did he do enough in game two to say, oh, yeah, he's fine now? Like his game one performance was awful and now they're okay. Or was it still like, you never know what you're getting from him?
You don't know what you're getting from him. And I think his biggest problem has always been recovering from bad goals against. Like, I think of when the Rangers called up Shesterkin. I remember there was a game in Edmonton. There was a game in Edmonton he allowed goals against, and I didn't think he was going to get the hook, and he did. And after that, he didn't play for a while, and it felt like he needed a reset. But I do give him a lot of credit recovering from that Scheifele goal, because when that happened, I literally was like, this game is going to be done right here. And it wasn't. Do you keep him on a short leash? You have to at this point, right? Like, you know that you have to. But I think he needs some help just cooling off a little bit more.
He's not the only one, obviously, but I had this text exchange with Marty weeks ago when Georgiev was plummeting. And I said, he has to show better demeanor here after these goals. It's not helpful for him or his teammates. And so I'm with you. Like the fact
he needs
that
a text from my dad, like the story I tell the game. I was with the Flyers in New Jersey and I stayed on my knees and he called me after the game. He never really talked to me after games. That wasn't his style, but he called me after the game. It was never just stay on your knees after a goal. Get up. That's all I said. I don't care if that was a good goal, bad goal, get up. Right. I was like, oh, maybe he needs to call Georgiev and let him know that.
Yeah, why not?
He's got a win under his belt, and we will see what happens in game three of the series. It has been our pleasure to have you on a day earlier than usual, Shayna. Thank you. Enjoy the hockey this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, Darren Dreger coming up next, a hockey insider from TSN. It's Sabres Live. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are back and we are on schedule once again because it is Thursday, I think, Marty. And lo and behold, here's our hockey insider, Darren Dreger from TSN.
Dregs, how you doing, man? I saw you just 12 hours away and I had to stay for the late overtime game. You guys were already in bed, all tucked in by that point. But good to see you last night. Hey, I forgot to ask you yesterday, but I guess we'll start there. Lindy Ruff, new and again head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. When you were a young buck in the business and Lindy was coaching the Sabres against the Leafs and all of that, did you have some good interaction with Lindy? I was going to bring up his comments after the Darcy Tucker trying to take out Jochen Hesch's leg and calling it a joke. That's a joke. I want him suspended. I want to be in the hearing. I'm going to call the league. Like, do you have any fun interaction you had with Lindy back in the days? Or
no, I not really, other than the Western Canadian connection, right? So in passing there, every once in a while, there'd be a real brief conversation. Hey, have you seen your family? That sort of stuff. But Lindy, when I crossed paths with him normally back in those days, it was in playoff time, right? Mm-hmm. And coaches, no different than players, take on a completely different personality. So he was always pretty intense and didn't have time for chit chat or ridiculous questions. And I was known for asking ridiculous questions back in the day. So
I feel like you and Lindy could be at the height of the sarcasm that could be in a conversation. Like you guys could go toe to toe in the sarcasm department.
For sure. These two are meant to have a great public debate. When I say public, I mean like at a bar.
Yes.
Well, I did cross paths with Lindy at a bar in Buffalo prior to the start of the year, but then he was still gainfully employed with the New Jersey Devils, and Tom Fitzgerald and the entire crew were there. It was during the prospects event. I was just purely there as a spectator taking in all of the action. And I was there with a couple of buddies, and we ended up going to an establishment in Buffalo, and there was Lindy in the group. So that was the last time I saw him. But you know what? On one hand, I'm happy for Lindy, because what we know, and you guys have talked about this at length, we know that Lindy Ruff is a good coach. And so when you look at the hire at face value, yeah, I mean, Kevin Adams told the assembled media when he fired Donnie Granato that he was going to hire experience. Well, he gets that in abundance in Lindy Ruff. So I still think Lindy's a good coach. I really do. The familiarity in Buffalo and with the Sabres organization, maybe that had some influence. Maybe it matters. I don't know. But what I do know is that Lindy is going to have to be able to push buttons that Granato either didn't feel that the group was ready to have pushed, or, you know, he just didn't want to take that path. Either way, the results are going to dictate whether Lindy Ruff is the right hire for the Buffalo Sabres, and we're not going to know that until we're well into next season.
What is your biggest story from the Stanley Cup playoffs so far? This doesn't have to be something you're, you know, encouraged to talk about through your employer, TSN, but something that has intrigued you personally here as we sit a week in.
That's interesting. There are a number of big stories. One that I'm kind of working on right now, I can't even hint at because it's a big one, and it involves an Eastern Conference team, potentially could be disruptive. So we'll see how it all plays out moving forward here. Injury is always, this time of year, something that bugs me. It does. And I think that most fans, especially if you're in the gambling realm, it bothers you even more so, right? Because, you know, you're guessing, and other sports take the guessing out of it. And I might drill down on the Maple Leafs, so I really want to get specific. Again, I can appreciate why a coach or a general manager wouldn't want to divulge specifics. But when it gets down to starting goaltenders or injuries, like, come on. Okay, you know, if somebody is out there and we can see that player injured his knee how many weeks ago and we maintain lower body, okay, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, in Willie Nylander's case, there's been all kinds of speculating on what it might be, including yesterday, right? Is he going to be a possibility, as the Maple Leafs maintain, for Game 3? Well, obviously he wasn't. He didn't play Game 3. And if you pay any attention to the morning skate, he stayed out there, pushed hard, but stayed out there after the normal morning skate with the healthy scratches, which is always a pretty clear indication that player isn't ready. But if it's back or lower body or something along those lines, like everybody has talked about, there's no way he's pushing himself the way that he pushed himself. I suggested on Overdrive yesterday that it could be migraine related, something that he's dealt with in the past. And I see that my friend Elliot Friedman has now jumped on that bandwagon, and that could very well be what it is. But this is what happens when you don't give more information.
Yeah,
right. As an NHL club, guys like Friedman, guys like me, reporters who do their due diligence, get poking around. And what happens is you don't just find out inside information on William Nylander. You start finding other stuff out that maybe they don't want reported as well. So you got to be careful. And I can understand them wanting to be protective, but it's not our job as reporters, as insiders, to toe the party line for any team in the National Hockey League. So that stuff bugs me.
So you mean when you're trying to hand them flowers, be careful because you might throw the vase at them, like I said on SportsCenter last night?
Okay. I had a buddy from, I've got a lake place in Manitoba. My neighbor sent me a text this morning. He goes, man, you were shaking your head at Marty Baron on that post-game coverage last night over the flowers and the vase and all this stuff. He goes, I'm sitting on my couch and I'm like, pardon? He said, I had to rewind and try and figure out exactly what. But when he got it, like the rest of us, then we're like, okay, Marty, you're bringing it today. That's a pretty good analogy. We could all visualize why that would happen.
I tried to do a search on Google this morning to get a perfect translation from the actual French saying. It says, after the flower comes the pot. But, you know, it's like I couldn't find really anything on social and on Google. So I didn't send you. I didn't like bother you with that this morning. Hey, okay. You mentioned playoffs, being in a bubble, being sometimes I hear comments after games and you know, it kind of rings alarm bells. You were in Winnipeg. You and I talked about it a little bit yesterday. Connor Hellebuyck after game one, when he said, all I had to do is make one more save. They lost, like they won the game 7-6 to Colorado. Yeah. And he said, all I had to do is make one more save. And then in game two, he made a couple of blunders, right? And it's like, is he in the right mindset? That could be problematic for the Jets if he's not the best player on the ice in that series against Colorado, right?
100% agree. And really, we haven't talked about that yet, other than the obvious and looking at the stats. But he hasn't become a focal point of having to be better for the Winnipeg Jets to ultimately win this series. And maybe that changes after game three in Denver as the series shifts over there. But what's interesting is, and Rick Bowness, the coach of the Jets, said it in a complimentary way. And it was after giving up six in game one, where the Jets narrowly won that one in the opener in Winnipeg. And he reflected back to a game, whenever it was, a season ago in Detroit, I think, where Hellebuyck got lit up. And he went to have a conversation the next day with Hellebuyck just to see where his mindset was and, you know, kind of help him push past it. And, you know, he said, I basically started the conversation. How do you feel? You know, last night was this and that. How do you feel? Huh? Yeah, no, I feel great. There was nothing I could have done differently. I feel 100%. I'm good to go. And he kind of looked at him and went, okay, all right. I mean, that is the personality of Connor Hellebuyck, right? Like has that ability to flush a game. And I think everybody in that room knows it. They appreciate it. They probably wish that they had individually more of that. And they have zero doubt and 100% faith that even though he's had two games, both on home ice, where he could have, probably should have been better, as the series shifts to Colorado, I'm sure they're 100% convinced that he's going to be a difference maker on the positive side. But the rest of us, Marty, Duffer, we need to see it, right? Yeah, we need to see it. He can't mismanage the puck the way that he did on the Parise goal, and he can't let Josh Manson beat him, even though it was, you know, a couple of errors made by the Winnipeg Jets that led to it. You know, and led to the breakaway. So he's got to be better, no doubt about that.
Highly unlikely the newest NHL team gets called the Utah Flush, but that would surprise many if it does happen. What is your take from Utah's, first big public appearance yesterday? And are we any closer? Well, obviously we are, because the calendar keeps turning, but to getting a name on this team.
I don't think so. And I wonder, have they made it clear yet whether they're going to turn it into some sort of competition or contest or something along those lines? It feels like a marketing scam. And okay, I mean, let them fill their boots. I mean, the advantage that Vegas and Seattle had in expansion was they had all the hype and the buildup that led to them eventually, you know, pulling the curtain open and look at this fancy new renovated building we have in Seattle, or, you know, Vegas, and all the hype and the spectacle that went into that. So now they're inheriting the relocation Arizona Coyotes. But as we're seeing the pictures here of the guys touring, I guess what comes to mind for me is a collection of high school graduates who are touring universities, and they go from a class of maybe 50, maybe 75 people in their grade 12 graduating class to getting to this monstrous university and their eyes just opening wide with all of the possibilities and the grandeur of what this facility was going to present to them. That's what we're seeing with these poor kids, you know, touring Delta and getting shepherded around Salt Lake City. And look, I haven't done a whole lot of investigating, but I spent time with Kevin Cheveldayoff in Winnipeg during one of the morning skates. And he reminded me of the time that he and his wife spent in Salt Lake City and said, guys, you know, he's like, this is a wonderful city. And if the players don't know it, they're going to learn to love it. I mean, clearly it's on the other side of the mountain. So you've got Denver on Colorado on one side, Utah on the other. And it's just a wonderful place to live. So I don't think it's going to take anyone associated with the Arizona Coyotes long, player or hockey operations long, to figure out that this is nothing but a great thing for them.
Are you calling for Liam O'Brien to be the new captain of the Utah Hockey Club or whatever? Because he took the microphone and he's like, you guys can call me Spicy Tuna. Is this allowed? Am I allowed to be called Spicy Tuna in Salt Lake? Like, it was, but I think the players really, like, for many years, it's sad. You leave Arizona, but really with the support and the organization and the ownership was really troublesome in Arizona. And then they get to Salt Lake and it's like, yeah, hey, this Ryan Smith guy and his wife and the group, they are putting the red carpet out. I think this is a great opportunity for those players to have a rebirth of sort in the National Hockey League.
Well, so here's what you're never going to hear about from, you know, Ryan Smith or the group in Salt Lake City. Rumor, speculation that bills aren't being paid.
Yeah,
that there's a threat that the players aren't going to get paid, that the ownership isn't going to be able to meet payroll and all of that. And, you know, there came a point in time where I stopped asking the National Hockey League about those sorts of speculated stories. I just did. I stopped, you know, texting and emailing the commissioner's office because they either wouldn't answer or it would be bogus or it was true and they couldn't tell me that, you know, all of that kind of stuff. None of that off ice nonsense is going to happen with Ryan Smith and SEG. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, look, there have been hurdles that I'm sure the Marullo family tried to overcome and weren't able to overcome. And I don't mean to just pin it on him. You know, this is the end of a failed experiment in Arizona. Now, you know, I'm sure Commissioner Bettman and many around the National Hockey League ownership group probably feel like there's missed opportunity in Arizona. But it's not just the Marullo group that couldn't get it done. There were multiple owners of the Arizona Coyotes that couldn't get it done. So I'm skeptical that 5 years from now, yeah, I know there are billionaires that want to have an NHL franchise. Okay, yeah, build a building first, and then maybe I'll start to be among the believers. I'm not right now.
We got to fly, Darren. Thank you so much. And we're back to wrap Sabres Live right after this.
Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we got 4 points after the first two games. I wasn't even going to answer your question because you are such a weasel. It's not even funny. Next question.
Weasel!
You're trending towards a weasel of the day in the future in honor of Jake Voracek's career, which came to an end yesterday. Thank you to Gianna in the control room for everything over the years. We will see you soon. Have a great weekend, everyone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.